There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing. On. There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to this month's edition of Labor Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM, live on the dial and all across the web. And this is your co-host, Mustafa Henaway, always joined with...
Stefan Lucet. Thanks for joining us on this 15th of November, of December. Holy cow. So we've got a great show for you today. A big interview with Lisa Skeet from the Toronto District QP Council, talking about the big strike and illegal walkout and all of the rest of it in Ontario with education workers that took place at the end of November, early December. But before we get to that, we wanted to point out a few stories that we didn't get to this month.
Moose? And the first one is holiday season is fast approaching or is already here. November and December are the deadliest months for Amazon warehouse workers and warehouse workers in general, starting from, you know, before Black Friday, Cyber Monday, up until Christmas. It's a period really with high accidents, with mandatory overtime, and workers being pushed to the very end. So on Cyber Monday, there was, and Black Friday, there was a global day of action by the Make Amazon Pay Coalition, which saw strikes in Germany and in Bangladesh in supply chains for the garment workers who make Amazon's products of their house brand, clothing and towels. So it was truly a global day of action. And in here in Montreal, there had been flyering in front of different Amazon facilities, also in support of the continued unionization of the Montreal Amazon Workers Union. So really it was a truly global day in which Montreal participated in, and is really sort of the most difficult months for warehouse workers in general, and fortunately, all of them except, you know, one facility in Staten Island is unionized, right? So without any union protection as well.
Yeah, so we're going to follow this story. I mean, Mustafa's working on this campaign as part of non-labor radio duties. But we actually were maybe going to interview someone for the show today, but ran out of time.
And even though we ran out of time, we'll just flag it. We're organizing a press conference around the a group of former Amazon Associates workers who've been unjustly dismissed for standing up for their occupational and health and safety rights. So a lot of them face sanctions, reprisals, just the simple things, you know, challenging decisions to actually access CSST benefits. People get, you know, slowly pushed out if they successfully have a CSST claim. So Amazon's tactics sort of make it above the law, and we're sort of we're gonna focus on that in the press conference before Christmas, and we'll have much more news come January.
That's right. So we'll most likely speak to one of these workers in January for our January show. So look out for that. Another thing, I mean, this actually happened at the end of October, but we didn't cover it in November. We actually, being parents of young children, among other things, we totally skipped our November show. So apologies for that to all of our fans out there. But at the end of October, the Quebec Common Front of Public Sector Workers tabled its demands. This was on October 28th. So I went through the document of the demands, the sort of public-facing parts of it. Unsurprisingly, at this moment, wages are kind of front and center. You know, inflation. But a few interesting things. They are asking for annual consumer price index increases plus more. So not only do they not want wage cuts, they actually want wage increases. So this is obviously a key demand. There's a 40 some page document outlining and explaining a lot of these demands. So, and we're starting to see the union sort of do the work of bringing the demands to the shop floor, so to speak, like making sure that members understand them. There's been a lot of like online educationals that are accessible to anyone so that you can find out more about what they mean by proper respect in the workplace. How does that like get integrated into the negotiation process and so on? So obviously the big question will be, will the front maintain its unity? Will they, because in the last public sector negotiations, there was no common front, and the government used this to sort of chip away at, you know, the less militant unions. And in the end, very few were left over, and it was mostly the lower waged workers who were the last ones to sign and so had the least leverage. At this point in time, you got the APTS, the CSQ, the FTQ, and the CSN that represent something like 420,000 workers. So obviously the leverage is massive. And if we don't need to go any further back than 50 years to sort of see what happened in 72 when massive labor unrest kind of it was the biggest episode of labor unrest in Quebec's history, was the public sector negotiations of 72. And there's a bit of a nod to that this year. The slogan of the Common Front is a nod to the Nous le monde ordinaire, the slogan from 1972. Now it's Nous d'une seule voix, Nous d'une seule voix. And also, they have like in 1972, the demand was around a $100 minimum wage for the week. And this year, they're asking for $100 extra per week. So this is also like very advantageous for the lower end of the wage scale. It's a much higher percentage wage increase for people at the bottom end of the scale. Anyways, there's lots that could be said about it, and hopefully we'll be able to cover this more in the months to come. And hopefully we'll be kind of doing that coverage in the context of a big wave of labor unrest, because I think that's what's going to be necessary to sort of roll back a lot of the cuts to education and healthcare and the deterioration of the working conditions of those workers in particular. So that's on the whole Common Front side of things.
No, and the horizon, I mean, we'll see how the union sort of react to whatever the government's position will be in the new year, so.
No doubt. One last just like tidbit of news. We can't pass up the opportunity to point out that the General Secretary of the International Confederation of Trade Unions, also known as ITUC, was arrested in this sweep of corruption in the European Union. It was released a few days later after questioning, but anyway, sort of goes to show the how compromised, I guess, that organization is. I think we talk fairly often on the show about the World Federation of Trade Unions, a class-oriented trade union federation. And ITUC is kind of the opposite of class collaboration, and this is what you get, I guess.
No, it's, I mean, it's pretty incredible that they keep saying that, that this, you're allowed, that, don't worry, everybody. We'll get those fellows unionized in Qatar. It's really coming. It's
Yeah.
shoot. I mean, I guess this is the with these the trade union confederations that are really just sort of stuck in Geneva and are just among the elites and not.
What can you say? I mean, we'll follow this story more. I'm sure that we'll have a bit more of an update. This news came down just like a few days before we recorded the show, so we're in no place to really comment too much on it. I mean, if you want to look at the World Federation of Trade Union statements on it, that's one of the main places you'll find this information. It's not being published in the newspapers in Canada, despite the fact that all Canadian unions basically are members of this confederation. So think about it. We should get to our interview. Before we do that, just a reminder that we're part of the
We are part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network.
that's it.
And
You can find our podcast and many other labor podcasts there at their website and on Facebook.
you can always find our episodes on our Mixcloud
And on our Facebook.
and on our Facebook. And also, yeah, I mean, this is going to be like a great way to end 2000 and 22 is talking about probably one of the biggest workers' actions and battles in a really long time in Canada. So this is a great way to end 2022.
No doubt. So thanks so much to Lisa for coming on, and thanks to you for listening. And here is Lisa Skeet. Welcome back to Labor Radio on CKUW 90.3 FM. We're happy to be joined today by Lisa Skeet. She is the president of the Toronto District Council of QP, also an education worker. And she might tell us about some of the other things she does. She's on bargaining units and so on. But she's going to speak with us today about the historic struggle of Ontario education workers that sort of wrapped up earlier this month. So we're super happy to have her with us. Thanks for coming on the show, Lisa.
Thank you. And I'm excited as well.
Great. Well, maybe you can get us started for those, and they may be out there. We are in Montreal after all, so people may have been a bit less touched by what happened in Ontario. So maybe you could bring us sort of up to speed and generally on what happened during the months of November and early December for Ontario education workers.
Definitely. And I'll just roll it back even further. As you, as some would know, that we're in bargaining now. And so, and we are still in bargaining. And, and we had a tumultuous time, as many would imagine, with bargaining with our premier and our Minister of Education, Minister Lecce, who, again, is, if I may say, the Conservative Party. And we have always been... it's always been an uphill battle and a struggle for a conservative lens to understand the importance of wages, the importance of unionized labor entities and representing people, representing workers, who, by the way, education workers are a lot of the times referred to as the teachers. But just to give the audience a bit of perspective, we are everyone outside of the teachers and vice principals and principals of a school. We are the EAs, which are educational assistants, SNAs, special needs assistants, the caretakers, the instructors of languages or essential literacy skills. But we've also got trades. We've got engineers, we've got mechanics, we've got IT people, so music and itinerant, very important pieces of the educational pie on a daily basis. And so when we went to into negotiations, we did, of course, have wages, as with all collective agreements and things of that sort. Sorry, my daughter just came in for lunch. As you know, parents and Zoom life. So sorry for that little interlude. But back to this. Wages are something that we wanted to increase. And we were asking for $3.85 over a 3-year period. What we did and wanted to do is make sure that the public know, the community and allies know, that when we say that, one, it's not $3.85 a year, because we always hear, well, you know what, there's people that make $15 an hour, which is our living wage, which is not even a living wage. So we had to explain that. But one thing we wanted and wanted very much is services. There are not enough of us in the schools for the services that are required by the students that we see before us. And again, that's like the EAs, the instructors. You wouldn't imagine. I'm sure Montreal is the same with immigration and the need for English as a second language. And we started the year with, for example, my local in Toronto and TDSB, Toronto District School Board, being one of the largest school board, if not in the country, with closures of 300 classes of English as second language essential skills. We've got a program called International Languages, African Heritage in the elementary level, where children can learn a language of choice or heritage or ethnicity, 53 of which in African heritage. It is done after school, which parents like because it's something for their children now, because some of us are working 3 jobs, right? 300 classes lost, which equates to about 150 people. We're at 300 people now. So we really wanted to stress this was not only about a wage over 3 years. It was about services. It was about wages, though, matching inflation. We all know that the cost of groceries, forget about entertainment and gas, groceries have gone up. A head of lettuce can be $10. So that was our stress point. Lecce, Minister of Education, and his team with the OSBCU, which is the Ontario School Board Union, which represents 55,000 members across Ontario. We were at the table. We were saying, this is what we really need. Ask the people, ask the students, ask us who are also parents. And what we heard was, it's not affordable. We can't do the wage. We don't have the money. So what happened next, and I hope I'm not going sliding into other questions, is we said, we know what we're up against. And this time we really said, we have got to mobilize. We've got to mobilize with education. We've got to mobilize with others in QP, like OPSU. And the acronym eludes me right now, but I will search it while we're here. OPSU has education workers. It has 7,000 education workers within their scope of their labor union. And they were wanting the same thing. We've got universities like Brock University, McMaster, U of T, and York, who are saying the same thing. We've got to have a wage that meets inflation. We've got to have services. And we still need to have an attention on COVID personal protection equipment, PPE. Again, what we heard from our Premier and Minister of Education and the Conservative Party is, we just don't have it. We don't have it. Let's try to meet you another way. We can't do this. And so we said, well, you know what? We're going to go out. We're going to walk out. And the thought was, well, let us get the parents and others and allies behind us, like OPSU, like Unifor, the OFL, which is the Ontario Federation of Labour, CLC, Canadian Labour Congress, ATU, Amalgamated Transit Unit, and other labour councils like Toronto York Labour Councils to say, hey, it's us today. It's the universities tomorrow. Right now, we're embattled with QP, with the Canadian Hearing Association, formerly Canadian Hearing Society. We've got to stop this because it's us today. It's everyone tomorrow. So we've got to have a different kind of mobilization, but we've got to include the parents. We've got to talk. So we endeavor to talk to the public and talk to the people and say, here's what we're dealing with. Here's what we want to say. We don't want students out. We don't want parents who we know who are working two and three jobs, some like ourselves, to wonder where are they going to keep their kids because they can't afford to stay home. So we knew we had to have that appeal. The government came out with, nope, can't do it, but we're going to offer parents $200 per household because now we're going to go on strike, which was deemed an illegal strike. We called it a walkout. We thought, well, let's try work to rule, but we knew at this time with this present government, that would not be a strong enough action. So we canvassed the people and we were successful. And you may know that Queen's Park was inundated with 80,000 calls and emails within a 4-day period from all of us, from people saying, this is wrong. And that was Bill 128, which would take away the right to strike for education workers, much like if you remember back some time ago with the paramedics becoming an essential service and taking away another health care, you know. And this was also on the back of Bill 124, which affected health care workers and others and sick days. So what we saw was, and I'm sure you will both look at this as a historic mobilization of people, again, labor union, parent organizations. And I want to say respect to Quebec QP and British Columbia QP executives who, and it just touches my heart. And I probably will get emotional during this this interview because they, and I think for the, they asked the membership, and they all bought one-way tickets and stayed at the Sheraton in solidarity with us and went on the street with us. And from what I understand, hopefully I'm correct in this, the BC Conservative leader also called Premier Ford and said, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And we went to, we sat in Queen's Park, got in trouble. Some of us were asked to leave, but we sat and witnessed Bill 128 be repealed and the vote. But I have to say this, and I will say this, about 10 minutes before the vote was to be heard, and the Conservative Party, every single one stood up, our Minister of Education left the room. We think that speaks some volumes here. I don't know him personally. Can't say for sure, but the optics of it, if you will, were one that said, you know, you can give parents $200 and we do the calculation. That would probably exceed some of the services we're asking for. So it was historic again. Labor, people, provinces, international viewpoints. I believe it was on CNN. It was on international news and even far-reaching as Europe, the Caribbean. It was historic, and it was the time. It was the timing. I'm sorry that was long-winded, but I wanted to give a bit of a backgrounder on it. So hopefully I did okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, it's hard enough to fit so much. I know it's I'm setting you up for a long answer by asking you to give us this sort of background on this whole story.
I think it's important, though. I think important because then you can hear the pieces that need to be heard to understand what happened.
Mm-hmm. And Mustafa, feel free to jump in if you want.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to bring rattle off some of the details about the agreement, because sort of ended that by talking about the Bill 128, which was going to fine up to $500,000 a day for unions that were going on strike, impose a collective agreement, and so that was struck down or rescinded by the government. The workers did ratify a collective agreement on December 5th. And I want to sort of give some of the details of that agreement, and maybe you can comment on it and how you think that that agreement was received, because it was, let's say, far from unanimous. I would say it was ratified at 73% with 76% participation by members in the vote. And again, it's 55,000 workers. So obviously, if you have 90% participation in a union that represents 400 workers, it's a different scale. So we can understand that obviously it's harder to reach 55,000 workers. But some of the details of the agreement, a $1 per year flat rate increase, not really any new funding or new staffing money for expanding programs or even keeping them alive. The $1 per year represents between 3.5% and 4.5% increase on average over 4 years. But this is coming on the heels of what you mentioned, Bill 124, which was wage cap legislation in Ontario. And a friend of mine, who works for a different union in Ontario, did the calculation, and he says between August 2012 and August 2022, inflation has been about 25%. And school board wage settlements have been about 8.5% over that time. So that represents a 16% wage decrease over 10 years. So this is just a very broad, numbers. But I want to ask you about how the people that you talked to in the union felt about it, because notably Laura Walton, she's the president of the Ontario School Board Council of Unions of QP. She actually sort of came out sort of very for and against it in a way. The leaders of QP suggested workers vote in favor of the agreement, arguing notably that it was the best agreement that they could come up with, even though it was not perfect. Of course, no agreement is. But she was like, I don't like this deal, but I have to present it to workers because this may be as far as we're able to go in this round of negotiations. So all that to say, what did you see? What are people saying? It's been 2 weeks since it was ratified, not quite even. What are your thoughts now, like after 1.5 weeks of going back to work, I guess?
Right. Well, it's great that you said that. And just roll back again that you're right. This was a hard one, but why I think it was historical and seeing, you know, when we had over 10,000 people at Queen's Park and small pockets of people showing up, but showing out and saying, you know, enough, and facing 4,000. So what also happened is Ford also said, you know, we're going to fine people individual 4,000.
That's right.
And so, again, we got those 80,000 calls and all those things motivated a rescinding of that as well. Like, okay, we're not going to do it. But if it were that we were having the $500,000 per day, QP National was willing to deal with that bill. We also, again, got donations from, we got $1 million if needed from Unifor. We got 150,000. It was from either the BC or Quebec teachers. So we did have some monies coming in, but we see between these 2 weeks, it's talk time. It's listen, but more important, sorry for the ringing of the back in the background, but it wasn't talk for us just like throwing information out. We did do that, but we had to listen as well. And hence the 73% of the ratification vote, because you're right. And Walton is right. It's a deal that we didn't want. It's a deal that gave us no services, really. Funding, we know that the programs that have died will remain so. As you mentioned, the wage, you know, the Bill 124 and the wage gap, the inflation, and that 16% is something weighing on people's minds. Because I can tell you there are some people in QP as education workers that they cap at a week of hours at 15. You cannot work one job at 15 hours, right? But they're at precarious times where you either have to work an overnight job or an early morning to get to your school board job, right? And overtime has happened. There's no overtime. There's no work for supply teachers, right? So people were really weighing this. And there were two camps. I believe the camp that represents the, I guess, 27% were the ones that had the appetite for a general strike, saying enough is enough, and knowing that there were others in labor that were had an appetite for a general strike as well. ATU, Amalgamated Transit Unit, joined us and ended up having a tentative agreement within a week, but there was an appetite for municipal, some healthcare sector, private and public sector unions, certainly universities, to do a general strike and walk out. But here's the thing. We'd have to know and have to really organize and mobilize to have a big showing. You can't have a general strike and you've got a 30 capacity out, 70 not. So it was a big and hard pill to swallow without water. But it was taken to the members and with a heavy heart saying it's not what we want. It is a flat rate, but we didn't get the two-tier or the tiered, what is it called? Concessionary things. And we didn't get our whole collective agreement taken over and given to us by the Minister of Education. So hence you'll see a 73%. It is not unanimous. I wonder if that rounds off to about maybe 40,000 or so of the 55. But you know why I say it is what it is, and I'm not trying to be cliche, but it is what it is in the sense that this is the members' voices. It's my voice, and it's everyone that voted. And I think that I'm going to be honest that it is also, there were rumors that we'd get a punishment, if you will, for a repeal, and that we'd be locked out or out until the end of December, and then Parliament would close up shop. And we had to really say to ourselves, with the 80,000 calls that went forward with the parents and community groups, we don't think we'd have that support if we were out for a month and then Parliament comes back in. We had to do what we had to do, and the members, myself, spoke. And that's the reality.
Right. Yeah, that's the cold, hard truth. Yeah. Moose?
I mean, thank you for everything, Lisa. My mom's actually a member. She's a lunch.
Lunchroom supervisor.
Yeah. And so she's a member. So first, just want to say thank you for everything, you know, like, you know, the strike, you know, personally, like, is a personal issue too. So, but one of the questions is that, you know, when you were talking about this thing that it was, and you were talking before about sort of engaging the parents to have such a huge membership and not very, you know, just across so many schools, you know, how did that organizing sort of, you know, look like? What did it, you know, mean to like try to get in touch with people like, you know, my mom and sort of the things that led up to this, you know, historic moment, right? Because, you know, the real work is kind of boring, but, you know, it's important for people to actually to hear it. Just these things don't come out of nowhere, right?
It's a great question, and respect due to your mom as well, and all lunchroom supervisors who are really in our hearts, because just to paint a picture, and your mom could as well, you know, we are having one or two lunchroom supervisors see 300 children, 300 students, two people. And let's do another interview another day for violence in the workplace. You know, or having to deal with situations that you're not trained for, like an anaphylactic situation, an allergy, or a disagreement between students. Come on. No. But what we did was we went organic. We went back to basics, which is something that it's unfortunate that it took this for us to realize the importance of reaching out to people face to face, voice to voice, back to basics. That's what happened. We were at every Raptors game. We were at every social event with Toronto District School Board. Anyway, we have a, you know, those vans that have projectors, like the videos. We were everywhere. We had ads in the newspaper. We did radio shows. We went to town halls, city halls. We went to libraries, and we went to our members. We went by phone. We had meetings. Again, we had town halls, and we really, really, really utilized, and there are some that don't believe in it, but the power of social media, getting out there, far reaching beyond our border lines of Ontario, were very important to and keeping a succinct message that we are also the parents, we are also the caregivers, but we really want you to know that if we get what we are asking for, and if we are we don't have a concessionary collective agreement, it benefits who? The students. Or none. The students benefit in ways that are essential for an academic journey to be one that is healthy and safe, you know. So that was it. back to basics being absolutely everywhere until people were sick. Oh my God, QP again. And oh my God, Toronto, and rallies. We, one of them was actually coordinated by the Ontario Federation of Labor. And yes, people do suffer. Everyone that was on a streetcar, everyone that was in a taxi, trying to get to work to make a living or doing whatever it is we were doing. But there were 500 of us in the middle of the intersection at Young and Dundas for a good 2 hours. And then we walked down Young, up Queen, and stood in front of the Sheraton, downtown Sheraton on Queen Street, where the negotiations are. And it was important. Parents did it as well. Parents had a rally in front of the Sheraton saying both people at the table, QP, government, talk. We want you to talk. I'm not going to lie. There was a, there was also, I'm not going to paint a pretty picture. There was also a rally organized by parents who were against this, who were against the strike, who said, you know what, get in there. Like everybody, people that are working 15 hours, 2 hours, making $10 an hour. Like you are gifted. You are lucky. You've got the summer off. And people have a right to feel that way and say these things as well. So there was a rally. It was not a huge rally. I believe there may have been 100 people, but I do have to say that I feel that they have to be acknowledged as well. There has to be people that we hear that say, this is, we can't agree. It's just like the vote, you know? So that's that. I just wanted to acknowledge that as well. It wasn't rosy in any way. And there were people that were people saying, nah, this is, you guys are holding the students hostage. And we really want to say that if anyone's holding students hostage through trying to be a draconian, if you will, author of a collective agreement, it's the Ministry of Education at this present point, in any case.
And I mean, one of the things, and it sounds like the way that, you know, that like QP and the way that you've been sort of framing it, and maybe, I guess, some of the lessons from some of the harder strikes in the education sector is really that, you know, that obviously it's about the work conditions, but really too, it's about students, you know, and it's really about, you know, the quality of education and, you know, other things, you know, when you brought up, you know, it came to my mind, you know, where everyone is talking about, you know, bullying or cyberbullying in classrooms. If you only got, you know, one or two lunch supervisors for 300 kids, it's, you know, these are the moments when they're all together and where a lot of these, you know, issues could come up, right? So it's these are about, you know, inadequate resources to deal with the issues that parents and students face, you know, and then you've been able to successfully do that, even if there's still opposition or small, you know, tiny minority. But do you feel like that came out of like the lessons of previous strikes from both from teachers and from the education sector?
I think so. I think it has come from previous strikes, but I really think too that this came from, I mean, we did have great support from OSSTF, which is the Ontario Federation of Secondary School Educators, and also ETFO, which is the Elementary School Union, and morale building. Like, I am telling you, there were people on the line crying because they know they had to go to the food bank that night to get food. And this is before, and that's why they're on the line, because they said, I need something better so I don't have to go to the food bank. And they have children. And guess what? Their children go to school. So there's no way you can separate us from this. And I think that's why parents came out. I think that's why we saw the education unions of teachers. We saw principals and vice principals bringing us pizza, bringing us food cards for the groceries, because they said, you know, we may not be union. Sometimes we are at the opposite end of table when there's a grievance or an issue, but we're all in the same business, and that's for the students. And we can't separate our interconnectedness. And we all just said, you know what? We've seen what we've done prior strikes. But what we've seen, if anything, is they only were successful when there were allies mobilized, had a plan, had a short-term, long-term timeline goals to execute, had a plan B and C, and were willing to have people lobby. So we had the people on the picket lines organizing, and that was being organized. People organizing, what are we saying at Queen's Park? What is our press conference going to say? And who is it going to touch? It can't be about, we want a wage. We had to personalize it. And that's not a lie or like a front. It was really like, I you know, as you said, like to have two people see 300 students wanting to have lunch, to see the violence in, that's happening. We've had just the other day, students walk out of a secondary school called York Memorial because there are fights every single day and they can't learn. And they're like, we need people. They were like an advertisement for us. They're like, we need people in our classrooms. The people they're talking about though are the support staff, the education workers, because they've already got a teacher. Right. So I think it was from the past, and people outside of education worried, really worried, saying, wow, if we ever get to this, we don't want to be told we can't have a voice. And if that voice is strike or work to rule, that we can't do that. We have to be able to say enough. 16% inflation gap? Like, come on.
One place. And I'm sorry to cut us off here because obviously we could go on for a while.
I'll be back. Let me know.
There you go. There you go. I guess maybe to wrap it up, we could just hear about what's the next steps, I guess, for how you see it anyways for Ontario education workers. Because obviously, you know, it seems like a long time. You sign an agreement, it's supposed to last 4 years. But in reality, you're basically almost already at the bargaining table for the next agreement. And obviously, you got some lessons in your pocket from this one and some victories. So where do you see it going from here?
Amazing question. And I think what I hope, I'll say what I hope to see personally and what I think is coming. What I hope to see is that we really, really have a documentation, if you will, for educations on how to mobilize and how to get people, and not just in labor, but others, to embrace something that could affect everyone, that has far-reaching trickle-down effects, like a Bill 128, like a Bill 124 that was deemed unconstitutional in Supreme Court, that we have this as a case study of what it took to have a reverse effect from that doesn't usually happen, that was historic. We've got to take the time to make sure that this can be a case study, because this is not, you know, going to go away. There will be contentious bargaining and walkaways in all sectors. And we've got to pay attention, though, that inflation and a living wage also speaks to mental health. It speaks to just being able to live and survive. And we've also got to think that in this time, does our reality have to mean that we have to have 3 and 4 jobs? We're looking at housing. We're looking at the price of groceries. Maybe this is a case study in, instead of having all of these different sectors, like we have councils in QP, maybe we need labor councils that start to do educations again and training, because people have to be prepared to mentally prepare to possibly be out on strike for a month where you're getting $300 a week, and what that looks like when you're a single parent, single person, home family that has to deal with all the things that aren't at the bargaining table, like your mortgage, like your whatever. So I think that's the piece. We've got to do case studies on this. But we also have to, if we're going to have a ratification vote that looks more like 90 or 85, we've got to do better and not wait till it comes to this to speak to people, to not say, we're here as executive and you're the members and we'll give you information on a needs to know basis. No, we have to engage. We have to have people a part of committees on homers and pensions and collective agreements on how to negotiate, on how to finance your life. I think that's what I see going forward. And I also see that we are going to have to understand and accept, again, from the 73% that there are people that wanted something different. There are people that wanted a general strike. And we have to be able to say, the reason why we didn't do a general strike is because of dot, dot, dot. I think that that 27% needs to hear why we didn't go away that we really thought would work. And I think that that will say the most important thing, that we respect all involved. That's about it. Hope that answered it.
Absolutely. Well, if you like the question, I like the answer even more. Thanks so much. It's been a real honor to have you with us. So much respect to Ontario education workers and everyone involved in the historic struggle that was led by you all.
Thank you. And can I say something? I really thank you, because I said, you know, I saw the email. I said, you know, Helen, who was the president of the council that I'm now president for like 30 years. And this is what it is. Like, you're here, you're there, I'm here. But we know the importance of connecting across like area codes, because I can bet the same thing that you're experiencing is what we're experiencing. And we really need to find strength and learn from each other. So I am so thankful that that I was able to be a guest.
No, and we, I think we're all going to learn so much. So thank you. Really. Na, 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 na.
Every posse must work. Whoa, work. Every posse must work.
Every passing muscle work. You have to work. You have to work hard. You have to work.
And welcome back to Labor Radio. We were just listening to our interview, end of the year interview with Lisa Skeet, president of the Toronto QB District Council, talking about the historic strike and in Ontario by the QB Ontario Education Support Workers, representing even folks like my mom, as you heard in the interview. Yeah.
So glad to be able to share that with you all. Just a reminder that you can find our shows archive.theckut.ca website. You can also find them through our Facebook page. Look up Labor Radio on Facebook. And at the Labor Radio Podcast Network, they're both on Facebook and they have a website. And also that next month we'll be covering the Amazon workers struggle in Montreal. So look out for that. And if you like what you hear, drop us a line. We always want to hear from people who are listening, and maybe they can tell us about stories that we don't know about. Always looking to connect with people who are interested in these subjects in Montreal and elsewhere. So thanks a lot for listening.
And wish everyone a pretty safe and happy holidays this year. Yeah, because that's it for us for 2022.
That's a wrap.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. The show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island we also known as Jojage in Ganiagaha and Munayang in Anishinaabe, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I am your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, December 15th, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests. Meet Amir Haidar, a Toronto-based performer who has had a connection with the musical Come From Away from its very early days.
My journey with the show started in 2012. When I first immigrated to Canada, I went to Sheridan College in Oakville in Ontario, and my graduating year, they were starting this workshops of new Canadian musicals, and one of the first workshops was Come From Away. So it was the very first workshops that David and Irene, who wrote the show, had ever done. And so I'd known some form of the show since 2012. And then when I got to be a part of the Toronto production in 2017, 2018, up until the pandemic, it was such an incredible experience.
Absolutely charming guest, and I'm eager for you to meet him. Murdoch Chan is a theater maker who is taking up the helm of Artista, an excellent local mentorship program entering its ninth year. They'll tell us how to apply and how they figure out the year's coming cohort.
It's a bit like composing for a choir, right? Like, you don't want a choir of all sopranos. That would be like very intense. You want to have some altos. You want to have some tenors. You want to have the sopranos. Like, it's about finding voices.